Murder Monday is brought to you by CAMS Roofing and Remodeling. Lower your heating bills with a professional insulation installation by CAMS Roofing and Remodeling. Visit CAMSroofing.com to schedule your free estimate. Murder Monday starts now.
Police searched Gacy's home and found the decomposed remains of three bodies in a dirt crawl space under the house.
Tomorrow marks 30 years since Johnny Gosch disappeared on his paper route.
I just killed my mom and my sister.
The city is preoccupied with the killer, who in one note signed himself the Son of Sam.
The East Area Rapist, just when you thought the story couldn't get any worse.
Wrists and ankles chained, gagged, probably blindfolded.
We have an individual who apparently has the uncontrollable desire to kill.
It's Murder Monday on the Joe and Alex Show. Listener discretion is advised.
The reason we do Murder Monday is to bring attention to Crime Stoppers. They let you anonymously give tips. Call them. Here's their number. 1-800-222-TIPS. That's 800-222-TIPS.
This is the story of the Stainer brothers.
The odds of this happening within one family, it just makes you shake your head.
You have two brothers bonded by blood. But still, one deep, lingering question. Did somehow those experiences of the younger brother influence the maniacal behavior of the older brother?
The story begins with Stephen, who's the youngest. It's December 4th, 1972 in Merced, California. Stephen Stainer is 7 years old and is a freckle-faced second grader. As he's walking home from school, clutching the straps of his backpack, a man walks up to him. He tells Stephen that he works for a local church and is collecting money for the congregation. He asks Stephen if he thinks that his mom would want to donate any items to them. Stephen thinks about it, and he knows his mom is a nice lady, so he says yes. He thinks she'd probably be willing to donate something. The man asks Stephen to come with him. They walk just a few feet when a white Buick pulls up. Stephen willingly climbs into the car with the man, but they very quickly drive past Stephen's house, and now he's getting scared and confused. What Stephen was going to find out very soon is that the man who said that he worked at a local church was actually a guy named Irvin Edward Murphy, who had been recruited by the driver named Kenneth Parnell, a convicted child rapist, to help him abduct a little boy. Kenneth takes Stephen to a cabin that actually is only a couple hundred feet from Stephen's grandpa's house, but Stephen has no idea the entire time he's abducted. Kenneth molests Stephen that first night, and 13 days later, things escalate even further, as I'm sure you can imagine. And all of these first few days, Stephen pleads with Kenneth to let him go home. No one knew what had happened to Stephen. No one saw a thing. There were no cars or trucks to watch for, no sketches of possible kidnappers. Just like that, Stephen was gone, leaving his parents with nothing to do but post photos of their boy, follow dead-end leads, and desperately hope and wait. And this is the part that kills me, so get ready. Kenneth tells the 7-year-old boy that his parents couldn't afford him anymore since he was one of five children, and that they had asked him to adopt him since they didn't want him anymore. And as young as Stephen was, he believes it. And Kenneth tells Stephen that his name is now Dennis Parnell and told him to call him Dad. Kenneth acts like Stephen's father and for the next 7 years enrolls him into school and moves him all around California. Stephen's parents had even passed out flyers at one point of him to some of the schools that he was going to.
That's crazy.
But no one recognizes him.
Kenneth
gives him drugs and alcohol and leaves Stephen alone by himself when he does work during the day. And Stephen could have easily left, but he doesn't because he's been brainwashed into thinking that Kenneth Parnell is his real dad and the memory of his parents and family has started to slowly fade away. He also has no idea how to ask for help. At one point, Kenneth brings Stephen a dog. It was a Manchester Terrier named Queenie. It was one of the only bright spots for Stephen during his 7-year abduction because things kept getting worse and worse. At one point, a girlfriend of Kenneth's moves in and joins Kenneth in assaulting Stephen in 9 separate occasions at the age of 9. Then in 1980, after Stephen begins to enter puberty, Kenneth is starting to lose interest in him. This is typical of pedophiles. Like, once you start going through that, they're like not interested. They want younger kids. So He actually forces Stephen to help him abduct another little boy. So on Valentine's Day, Kenneth and Stephen abduct 5-year-old Timothy White, and Stephen is beside himself. He is tortured by the thought of 5-year-old Timothy enduring the same abuse that he went through, and he knew it was do or die, that he would be coming home if he was able to save this kid for doing something positive. 16 days after Timothy is abducted, while Kenneth is away at his night security job, Stephen leaves with Timothy and hitchhikes for 40 miles. Stephen wants to take Timothy straight to his house, but this kid is 5 and they have no idea what his address is or how to find it. So Stephen walks up to a police station and tells Timothy to go in and ask for help without him. So Stephen is standing outside waiting for police officers to, you know, get Timothy. But police officers actually recognize him standing out there and they detain both of them. Stephen tells them right away that the little boy is the missing Timothy White and then reveals his own true identity and story. By daybreak, both boys are reunited with their families and Kenneth Parnell gets arrested. Kenneth is tried and convicted of kidnapping Timothy and Stephen in 2 separate trials, and Stephen even speaks and plays a huge role in convicting him. But Kenneth Parnell only gets sentenced to 7 years and then is paroled after serving 5.
That's insane. I mean, all of that right there is just insane. Could you imagine me and the parents getting that call? Hey, we found your son.
No. Like, it was a
what?
Massive reunion. So
wow.
Once Stephen gets home, he has a really hard time readjusting to a normal life. He was used to drinking and doing whatever he wanted with no rules, no curfews. Stephen said in an interview, I returned almost a grown man, and yet my parents saw me as their 7-year-old. After they stopped trying to teach me the fundamentals all over again, it got better. But why doesn't my dad hug me anymore? Everything has changed. Sometimes I blame myself. I don't know sometimes if I should have come home. Would I have been better off if I didn't? Stephen never gets proper therapy for his ordeal and refuses to talk about the sexual abuse of his abduction with anyone. He's teased at school for being molested and drops out and starts abusing drugs and alcohol. His relationship with his father is super strained, and eventually Stephen gets married and works briefly with child abduction groups and talks to them about being safe and having kids and being safe. But then in September of 1989, Stephen crashes his motorcycle and dies from fatal head injuries. 500 people attend his funeral, and then 14-year-old Timmy White was a pallbearer. It was a tragic short life for Stephen, but the trauma his family was to endure was only beginning. When Stephen was abducted, his older brother Carrie was 11. And Carrie had started to feel neglected after Stephen's abduction by their parents and really yearned for more love and attention. When Stephen escaped his kidnapper, the media was obsessed with him. There were books and TV specials and TV movies made about his story. Carrie was obviously jealous. This is a kid also who I think clearly had some kind of genetic makeup that made him more susceptible to like psycho behavior. And then you put that in a sandwich with the trauma of his brother's kidnapping and emotional neglect, and voila, you get a monster. A year after Stephen dies in his motorcycle accident, they have an uncle, Jesse, who also dies. And now in hindsight, the family actually thinks that Carrie might have killed him because there is a big possibility that this Jesse guy had been molesting him. So Uncle Jesse is dead. And then 2 years later, Carrie tries to commit suicide and fails. A few years after that, he's charged with having methamphetamine and marijuana at some point. He's just a mess. And then in 1999, a woman named Carol Sund and her teenage daughter, Julie, and Julie's friend go to a lodge to stay the night where Carrie works as a handyman. Carrie knocks on their door in the middle of the night, pretending that he has something to fix. And that's when he sexually assaults both of the girls, and he strangles all 3 of them. A month later, the charred remains of Carol and the family friend are found in the trunk of their burned-out rental car in a remote area several hours away. The bodies are burned beyond recognition, so the police find out who they are from their dental records. And police receive a note in the mail with a hand-drawn map indicating the location of the 3rd victim, Julie Sund. Julie's decomposed body was found about an hour away from her mom's and friends. Investigators first interview Carrie in the case, and they're asking him about this note because the note is real disturbing. It says something like, we had a lot of fun with this one, like super weird. But they don't really believe that this clean-cut handyman who had no previous history of violence was involved. So instead, the investigation focuses on other employees at the Cedar Lodge and on suspicious people in the town of Modesto, where Carol Sund's wallet was found in the street several days after her disappearance. Then, on July 22nd, 1999, the decapitated body body of someone named Joey Armstrong, a 26-year-old Yosemite naturalist, was found near her cabin. Investigators determined that this woman had just been murdered the previous day. And they go talk to Carrie, who was hanging out in a nudist colony.
Oh, my favorite place to hang out.
Right?
I mean, you really let it hang out.
And the thing is, as soon as the FBI questions Carrie, he admits to the entire thing. He tells them, yes, I killed all these four people. He says that he's fantasized about killing women since he was a kid, even before he says his brother was abducted. He says, his lawyers try to argue that this is all because he just has mental illness. And he has childhood sexual abuse and trauma from his brother's kidnapping. But Carrie ends up being convicted in all four murders and given the death penalty. And there is kind of a sad but also happy ending to this story. So in 2004, Kenneth Parnell, who had abducted Stephen Stainer and Timothy White and had served that joke of a jail sentence, is now 72 years old in 2004. He has a nurse and he literally asks her if she will get him a young boy for $500. The nurse is smart. She knows immediately who this guy is. She's like, we ain't doing this. She goes and tells the police, and he gets arrested. He goes to trial, and Timmy White, who then was a grown man, is subpoenaed to testify in Kenneth Parnell's criminal trial. And even though Stephen Stainer was dead, Stainer's testimony at Parnell's earlier trial was read to jurors as evidence. And in the end, Timothy White, who Stephen had helped save, not only helped convict now Kenneth Parnell into jail, because so this guy ends up getting 25 to life and he dies in prison. So see ya. He got his justice. And then Timothy White grew up to be a police officer, which I absolutely love, with the LAPD. He got married and had two kids. He died at 35 from a pulmonary embolism in 2010. So he just passed away a few years ago. But Kenneth Parnell ended up dying from old age while he was in jail. And after Timothy White died, 5 months later, a statue of Stephen and Timothy was put up in a local park that showed Stephen holding the hand of Timothy escaping their captivity. You can see that photo. I'm going to put that up too on Instagram at Joe and Alex Show. The story was rough, I know, but there's kind of a little bit of a happy ending in there. At least Kenneth Parnell got justice in the end, but it's kind of sad that both Timothy and Stephen did not get to live a long life.
I think the most insane thing to me, because there's tons of insane things in that story, Alex, but it's just like he was not that far away from their grandpa's house or
the
thing.
Whole time,
like
a couple hundred feet.
Whole time. Like you think your child's gone. It's
for
like
7 years.
Right there.
Yep.
So, wow. Okay. Thank you. That's Murder Monday here on the Joe and Alex Show on Radio Now.